Our speaker this month has been Myers Raymer, and he is, I believe he's finishing up. This is going to be great. So.
Howdy, y'all. My name is Myers Raymer, and I'm an alcoholic. So in the enthusiasm thing, I peaked this morning about noon when I finished that DAA thing, so you guys are just kind of screwed. You're just on the downhill side of all of this other stuff. Holy cow, what a lathered up bunch this morning. I don't know whether it's because DAA is so new and they haven't been ravaged by the effects of outside influences, or if they're just doing a really good job of staying on track. But I've never been in a group of people that were so on point and so focused on what it was that they were supposed to be doing than that DAA bunch that I saw this morning. Pretty amazing stuff. If you've got little dope fiends in your family, if you're a dope fiend yourself and you've not gotten involved with them, I encourage you to do so. It's a pretty cool gig. Also, thanks for being here. I started to call Don and say, hey, Don, just set 3 or 4 chairs up. With the game and the day before Halloween and the rest of the stuff, I gotta say I'm a little disappointed. I kind of thought right here before Halloween we'd have a few women in chains costumes or some maybe not. Okay, I'm old, not dead. Come on, we got. It's always a weird deal to do this stuff. It's always a weird gig because it's like you slide into the month anticipating the whole deal, and it's like as we go through this thing, it's funny. For every talk I'll do during the month, if I do 4 talks up here on a Saturday night, I'll get 15 emails during the week. And then some of them are nice, and some of them are not so nice, and some of them are just – and a lot of them are just, hey, I just don't agree with you. Which is fine. I mean, this is fine. It's the nature of this stuff. There's going to be stuff that we talk about where we don't exactly see eye to eye on things. However, here in this group, one of the first things that I was introduced to was this thing called a big book, and this thing called this is the way we do it because this is what the big book told us to do. And so what they were doing, which I had not been involved with before, you guys know most of this story, but what I had not been involved with was this idea that we were going to take all this idea of subjective big book and we were going to throw it out the window. The big book didn't mean what I said it meant. The big book meant what it said it meant, what the book said it meant. And so the reality of that was that I had to reformulate and rethink my approach to the big book. And to 12-step work and to the steps and then later to see, look, I knew one person like that. Renee, look at that. That's so cool. Like, wrong sex and wrong costume, but hey, it's okay. That's so good. Thanks, Renee. I feel so much better now, I tell you. It's just... And so as we worked up through these steps and we look at some things, there's a point in time when all of a sudden when you're studying the book, the shift kind of slides off of the steps, and then we have to start looking at sponsorship and we have to start looking at some of this other stuff. And it's an amazing thing that as we learn how to sponsor through the steps and through the directions that the book gives us, things are pretty different. Things are, rather than sitting and meeting, sharing a bunch of ideas about sponsorship, and letting us take what we want and leave the rest. I mean, we've all heard this stuff. We stopped doing that. And what we did was we looked at what the book said do, and then when we did what the book said, and then we got the results. And so looking at it from both sides of the equation, because remember now, I'm never one to just say, this is what I think based on somebody else's experience. This is what I think based on 23 years of being in these rooms watching drunks come and go. And the guys that stay, the guys that came, grew, stayed, got happy, these are guys that adopted the book as a way of life, the steps as a way of life as they were written, instead of trying to form them and maneuver them to be what they wanted them to be. I just, you know, the steps are just too confining. Well, okay, so's addiction. So's doing all this other stuff. So's standing, walking up and down in front of the liquor store waiting for it to open up. This is, I mean, it's just as confining doing it that way. It's this much nicer this way. We managed to work all the way up to step 11 and stuff. And so if you have your book, let's turn to the bottom page 85, and I'm going to read just a little bit, and then we'll get into step 12 stuff, which is the real reason that we got all this stuff kind of heading this direction. Bottom of page 85, it says, step 11 suggests prayer and meditation. We shouldn't be shy on this matter of prayer. Oh, I almost forgot. In case you guys haven't read your email today, Clifford had a great grandson today. This is just the coolest. This is just the coolest. And what's really cool is that if you've been around for very long, and I mean, I knew Shelly when Shelly was way, way too young to be having kids, and it's just an amazing thing to watch her grow, recover, get really, really strong, get up there in the Northeast and kick AA butt up there, and then meet this guy, and then they have this baby now, and it's just I can't wait to see this little kid. Man, I got to see this kid, because I'm telling you, it's just going to be, this is going to be wheels off. We shouldn't be shy on this matter of prayer. Better men than we are using it constantly. It works if we have the proper attitude and work at it. Listen to Bill's humility on this. It would be easy to be vague about this matter, yet we believe we can make some definite and valuable suggestions. Always remember, guys, that a few short years ahead of this, Bill Wilson is a bona fide, card-carrying, poster-waving agnostic. And what unfolds here in a couple of paragraphs is some of the cleanest, clearest, most concise literature around getting on a spiritual path that we're going to read anywhere. Pretty amazing stuff. They talk about this stuff. It says, when we retire at night, they just pick it up there. We constructively review our day. Were we resentful, selfish, dishonest, or afraid? Now, listen, I want you to, as we read this stuff, I want you to keep in mind your experiences in sponsoring folks. Just think about the men and women that you sponsor, and the men and women that do this, and the men and women that don't do this. It's an amazing thing to watch. If you guys were transparent, if there was no dishonesty in you, if we could just see the ones that prayed and meditated at night turned orange, and the other guys just sat in your regular color like this, it'd be amazing to see. You'd look around the room, and the guys that you already know as winners, the guys and gals that you already know as people who are plugged into this deal, would be glowing orange. They look like little UT guys. Really amazing stuff like that. And then you'd see guys that you already see edging toward the door, and they're not doing this stuff. But let me ask you something. In your own personal experience, when things got the goofiest, let's say you came in, you got this deal, you worked the steps, you got feeling better, everything worked well for a little while, and then all of a sudden the job lines back up again. She says you can come back in the bedroom again, so things kind of warm and fuzzy there again. I mean, life is starting to get kind of warm and fuzzy and nice again like this. What's the very first thing we stop doing? Praying and meditating. It's the dead dumbest thing I've ever seen in my whole life. God did exactly what He said He's going to do in the very first thing. I may be painting that with too broad a brush. Most of the men that I sponsor, this is what happens. They start setting God aside, and then they start drifting back the other direction again. And it's cause and effect. If I do what I'm supposed to do like this, it goes one way. If I do the other thing, it goes the other way. And it's an amazing thing to see. This is the reason why years ago, we'd start asking these questions. Guys would call me and they'd say, man, it's just in the toilet, man. I just can't. I hate this thing. I'm just dying here. And I'm going, I want to ask two questions. One, where are you in your prayer life? And two, where are you in working with others? And I guarantee you guys, they go like a glove in a hand. It's this exact, you know what's happening. He's not praying and meditating, and he's not doing any 12-step work. And consequently, it's all going down. A self-will has rekindled itself, and now he's out there manhandling it, making a tough going of that whole deal. You'll see this. If they're going to ask us these questions, see if they sound familiar. Were we resentful, selfish, dishonest, or afraid? Do we owe an apology? Have we kept something to ourselves which should be discussed with another person at once? Were we kind and loving towards all? What could we have done better? Were we thinking of ourselves most of the time? Yes. Or are we thinking of what we could do for others? No, of what we could pack into the stream of life. Now, listen, guys, they just ask you some reflective questions. These weren't rocket science questions. These weren't questions that we have to sit down and write for 40 minutes about them. They're just reflective questions so that you'll quit trivializing the whole deal. Remember that under every goofy feeling, under every piece of angst, there's usually something that looks like dishonesty. And it's an amazing thing that if we stop asking these questions, at some point in time, this stuff just slips back into our life, and it's as easy as falling off a wet log. It's going to happen. And so that's the reason why they're saying, listen, if Bill thought we could get by with this thing without doing this often, he'd have said, listen, once a month, once every other month, whenever it's convenient like this, why don't you go through this little inventory deal like this and ask these questions? And it didn't do that. He's saying every night, do this, because he knows exactly how long it takes. It takes us from me walking here back there where Cece is before my self has reared its ugly head again and I'm back to being selfish. And Bill knows these things. That's the reason why he's asking. But we must be careful not to drift into worry, remorse, or morbid reflection, for that would diminish our usefulness to others. This is great stuff. How many times have you started thinking about something laying in bed at night? You're looking at the ceiling, and all of a sudden you get this morbid thought, and you're reflecting about the commitment you made that you can't keep up with, and this, that, and I said this, and that. And that's what they're doing. They're saying, hey, don't do this. This is not what this is about. We're not trying to beat ourselves up before we go to bed. We're just trying to reflect on the day and say, you know. Clifford taught me one of the best lessons I ever had one time. When I first got here, Clifford always carried those little spiral notebooks that spiral across the top. You can buy them at Sam's. You can buy 6,000 of them for 10 cents. I mean, they're just like, they're dirt cheap. And you put them in your pocket like this. And I've got a stack of them sitting next to my bed at night. And I'll go through my nightly review. I go through it. I ask the questions like this. And I'm always a little caught off guard that there's always stuff I need to deal with. And when something comes up in my head, I write it down and just leave it there on the nightstand. In the morning when I get up, the very first thing I do is tear off that note and stick it in my pocket. And when I get to work, I do my quiet time at work because that's quiet. I mean, I'm there at 4:30 in the morning and it's quiet there. There's nobody there. And so I can tear that stuff off and take a gander at it. And that's the first thing I deal with is make sure that these things, so I'm not going to carry these things into the next day. And that's how your life stays real simple and you don't get all jammed up with 5 pages of legal notes that you're writing down, trying to dump all this stuff on a piece of paper after a month or two of not doing it. After making our review, we ask God's forgiveness and inquire what corrective measures should be taken. You can see the hand of the Oxford Movement in a whole lot of this stuff, guys. It's amazing when you can't hardly read any history of AA without getting your nose rubbed in the Oxford Movement and their profound influence on our program in the arena of prayer and meditation. It's just amazing stuff. If you go back and read any of the guys like Clarence Snyder and some of these other guys like this have written lots about, there was lots written about their lives and what they did around prayer. On awakening, let us think about the 24 hours ahead. We consider our plans for the day. Before we begin, we ask God to direct our thinking, especially asking that it be divorced from self-pity, dishonest, and self-seeking motives. We've called this out every time that we've read anything that's like this through the whole month. I've tried to call this thing to your attention. I suspect that if they had asked you and me to write this book, that the very first prayer in the morning would be, God, save me from VO, and whatever, Budweiser. You see what I'm saying? But it didn't. Once again, our attention is being diverted from what we think was the problem back over to what really is the problem, selfish and self-seeking motives. Under these conditions, we can employ our mental faculties with assurance. After all, God gave us brains to use. Our thought life will be placed on a much higher plane when our thinking is cleared of wrong motives. Man, this is good stuff. This is, once again, we're reminded that you can fool me, you can fool the guys in AA, you can fool everybody else, but you ain't fooling God. If your motives are jacked up, watch what happens. I promise you. Because you're going to get called on it, buddy. I'm telling you, it's going to get ugly. In thinking about our day, we may face indecision. We may not be able to determine which course to take. Here, we ask God for inspiration in intuitive thought or decision. We relax and take it easy. We don't struggle. We are often surprised how the right answers come after we have tried this for a while. I got to tell you, if I've had 1,000 calls from men I sponsor over the years, 900 of them will start out with them saying something that happened in the day. Something, drama, something, it just fill it in, X, whatever it is, you fill it in the blank like this. And the very first thing I'll say is, did you pray about this yet? And it's always, I'm not sometimes, but always there's just dead air on the other end of the line. Because it always seems like a novel idea. It's like, oh, I could have had a V8. It was just, I just, pray, pray. It's like what we want to do is we want to forget everything. It's like those little fish, those little goldfish and stuff. They say that their head resets every 3 seconds. They don't even know. Like, and this is what we're like. This is what we're like. Our head just resets, and all of a sudden we just forget that the solution is prayer. The solution is connecting to God. It's just anyway. I do this next time it flies up and hits you in the teeth. Do something novel. Pray first, and then call. Especially if it's me, and then call, and then let's see what happens. I'm not saying that it's gonna be dealt with right then. But if you don't start where the book asks you to start, then we don't have a place to start. Now I've got to go back and try to figure out what the heck's going on, and I'm not that bright. I'm not. We're often surprised how the right answers will come after we've tried this for a while. We got that. What used to be the hunch or an occasional inspiration gradually becomes the working part of the mind. Let me say this. I think if we took a straw poll of everybody that's been in these rooms for 4 or 5 years that actively work this step, actively do what they're doing, we'll agree that this is exactly the way it works. That after a while, this stuff becomes so natural and so a part of our psyche, the way that we do business, that it's just we wonder why we didn't do it all along. Why wasn't it always there? Because it works so well. I want you to skip down to the end of this thing because we're going to run out of time for some of this other stuff we're going to do. But down toward the bottom, page 87, as we go through the day, we pause when agitated or doubtful and ask for the right thought or action. I think I've referred more drunks to that one paragraph than any other page in the big book. Because there's none of us that aren't agitated at times. There's none of us that go through that deal. As we go through the day, we pause. When agitated or doubtful, we ask for the right thought or action. We constantly remind ourselves that we are no longer running the show, humbly saying to ourselves many times each day, "Thy will be done." I don't know, guys. There's something in me that just wishes that at the moment that we had our psychic change, at the moment that we had this conversion in our being around this idea of God, I wish there was a big pause button that would just grow on us like this. We just walk around and be a big red button right underneath our shirt, and every time we got agitated, we could just pause and just remember. She says something that draws me off size, that which she's world famous at doing like this, and I'm just like this, and just hit the pause button, dude, and just slow down for a second and look at this thing. You get that? How many times have you been drawn off sides and reacted just like that, and then 2 minutes later you're going, "God, why did I do that again? Now I got to call Myers and I got to tell him that I was a dick again, and I got to go, dude, like this. I mean, why do I do that?" Pause. Pause. We move way too fast through this minefield that is our life like that. It's like if the landscape is littered with minefields, I don't understand why it is that I have to be the guy that the only way I can find them is to step on them. You know what I'm saying? I mean, you can tell me where they are until they're blue in the face, but I'm the one that has to go out there and just step on every one of them. Go, "Well, I think there's one over there. I'll go over there too and get that one. While I'm at it, I might as well." And it just gets bloody. And sometimes I got to tell you, sometimes I smile because I sponsor men that are just like me, and I go, "Oh, you're a minefield guy too, because you're stepping on them too. I've been telling you for 2 weeks where they are. Just please." That's the gig. That's where we're headed anyway. That's what we're trying to do. We are then in much less danger of excitement, fear, anger, worry, self-pity, or foolish decisions. We become much more efficient. We do not tire so easily. For we are not burning up energy foolishly as we did when we were trying to arrange life to suit ourselves. You ever realize that this stuff, after you sobered up, how much more peaceful it was and how much energy you had? People say, "Man, I'm just full of energy. It must be that gym I signed up for." May have had something to do with it, but I think more than anything it had to do with the fact that you're not lying awake nights plotting and scheming and trying to remember what you said and trying to... I mean, it's a full-time gig trying to just juggle all these personas that are who we are. I mean, it's just a big old ugly mess. It works, it really does. We alcoholics are undisciplined. Yeah. So we let God discipline us in a simple way we've just outlined. But this is not all. There is action and more action. Faith without works is dead. The next chapter is entirely devoted to step 12. How many times have we been told this, that there's action and more action? I mean, the thought that Alcoholics Anonymous would be passive, the thought that Alcoholics Anonymous would be nothing more than us going to meetings, is the most ludicrous thing I've ever heard in my whole life. time and time and again on these steps, if you think back over the last 3 weeks when we've been talking about this thing, time and time again, what we've done is that we've had our noses rubbed in the fact that every step they implore us, come on, they set a tone for how fast we're going to come, and then they're going to say, this demands what? Action and more action. And nowhere in there did they say that going to meetings was the action. They never identified that as the action. I just want to be clear on this thing, okay? In case I haven't pissed you off during the month, I want to make sure that I still got a little time to do it, 30 minutes, and I'll get there. It never said that. This was the hardest lesson for me to learn. I'll never forget asking Clifford in the very first meeting that we had. We were sitting in his living room, in his den, and when he had just finished demoralizing me because I didn't know anything about the book, But I remember saying, he said something. He said, here's our schedule for meetings at Primary Purpose Group. And I'm going, there's only 3 meetings. I said, what about the rest of the nights? And he said, well, we're busy doing other things on those nights. And I didn't get it. I didn't understand what he was talking about. But I remember leaving there that day. And one of the things that kept hitting me in the head was, is that why don't they have more meetings? I mean, if this group really knows what they're doing, they ought to have at least 3 meetings a day. We could have a 6:30 meeting and we could just fill it up full of meetings. And I hadn't been over here. My first meeting was on a Thursday night, and I hadn't been here 10 minutes, and somebody brought up the fact that that there was nowhere in the big book that it talked about going to meetings. That was not the key thing. And I argued until I was bloody, and everybody else in the room wanted to shoot me. I mean, it was like this would start my downhill spiral with Dara that would go another couple of months. I mean, because she already knew. And it would take me a while to figure that one out. Starting with Fred's story, we're not going to turn there, but starting with Fred's story, actually starting with Abby's story when he goes to see Bill, and then later with Fred's story and later these illustrations that we're getting like this, we're given a picture of this 12-step work that is indeed miraculous. And it's something that, it's like they paint a picture of what a 12-step opportunity looks like and what 12-step work looks like, and I sometimes wonder about these guys if they didn't stand back and just watch a fellowship ignore them completely. It's like the first 100 must have been going like, dude, didn't they hear this? Aren't they hearing what we said? Don't they see what we wrote? Don't they? Because it's like everybody wants to completely ignore it. And over the last 40 years, especially the last 30 years, we made an absolute mess out of this idea of 12-step work and its importance. And I mean, if there's an area that we trivialized and we made fun of and we generally just kind of discounted as one of those sort of trivial, oh, that's a maintenance deal. I guess when I need to maintenance, I'll do that. Or, I mean, there's a million excuses that we come up with why we can't do that stuff. And we want to talk about this stuff specifically because, listen, Bill thought it was important enough that he wrote a whole chapter about it, chapter 7, working with others. A whole chapter just on that is the only step other than We Agnostics in chapter 4 where they tried to break stuff down for us to slide into step 2. Other than that, this was the only one that had the whole chapter was written about one step. I think if it had been trivial, I think if it had been something that was just a suggested kind of thing that was just, I think they probably would have just said it in passing. And oh, by the way, if you're bored spitless and you can't think of anything else to do and there's totally nothing else to do, go do some of that 12-step stuff. Maybe you'll meet somebody to do some of that 13-step stuff. You understand what I'm saying? I mean, it was just kind of funny how it all worked out. Flip over to your book to page 60. For a minute, we'll do some flipping around, and if you're not a flipper, I'll just read it to you anyway. Let's see where I put that. Okay, just hold your finger on that page. I want to read something first, and then we're going to go to page 60, okay? On page 562, if you got a fourth edition in the traditions, I'm going to read tradition 5 for us. This is a weird place to start this, I know, but there's a natural kind of a transition that goes through this thing, and I think we'll see it easier that way. Tradition 5, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the alcoholic who still suffers. Has one primary purpose, to carry its message to the alcoholic who still suffers. So the question would be, each one of these things we're getting ready to read there's a question in there, and we want to investigate it. The question here is, what's its message? And so if you turn over to 60, 12th step. Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all of our affairs. Now we're starting to kind of slide in on what they're talking about. Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message. So the message that they were trying to carry was that we'd had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps. That was it. That was the message. Which would lead to another question, which is obvious. Have I had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps? And if I have, rock on. Let's go do some 12-step work. If I haven't, let's go get one. You see? The reason I like to approach it from this angle, guys, is because it makes it real clear without all the goofiness, without all the other stuff that we seem to drag into this deal. They made it just real simple. This is what we're supposed to do. We come in, we work 12 simple steps, we have a spiritual awakening as a result of doing those steps, and then we carry that message that we had an experience that was so profound in nature that we recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. See, this is amazing stuff. Unfortunately, it's not the message that so many of us are teaching. Most everybody here is, because it gets real bloody when you don't. When you get up there and do something different, somebody's going to be calling you saying, "Hey, how come you were up there doing something different? The little dance thing was cute, and this." Let me tell you something. One night we had a member of our group. Okay, I want to tell this story. It just takes 2 seconds to tell this story. We had a member of our group. There was a guy from another group came over here, and he was kind of sniffing around this girl. He was just kind of, you know, doing the kind of circle dance thing, and he was just kind of looking around. And he really liked her, and she really liked him. But he was from another group that don't do anything like what we do. I mean, it was just like he didn't know anything about the big book. He didn't know anything about, but he'd been around for a long time. Okay, so she says, "Will you take him with you out to do this 12-step deal?" I said, "Yeah." So we go out there like this, and my deal is you can go out there for fine. Listen, I carried Cliff Bishop's books for 2 or 3 years before I said one word from a podium. I mean, all I did was drive him around and carry his books. I was his book boy and happy to do it. I've got to tell you, I was happy to do it because I didn't really want to do any of that stinking 12-step work anyway. So it was kind of nice. But he wants to talk. We're at Homeward Bound, and I go, "Dude, I don't even know you, man. Show up some, and we'll see if we can work you in." I mean, we got 10 or 15 guys standing out there wanting to work into the rotation. So he gets upset, and he tells this girl about it afterwards and like this, and she calls me during the week, and she says, he really wants to do something. Can you just let him read?" I said, "Okay, I'll let him read." So he shows up out there the next Friday night. We get in there like this. We walk in like this, while he's up there talking, he just introduces himself. And while he's up there, one of the little guys in the meeting goes like this. And I walked over there and he says, "Can you help me for a minute?" I said, "Yeah." And so I'm walking out looking at this guy over my shoulder as I walk out of the room. And this guy's got some problems and he's trying to tell me about it like this. And I'm trying to hear what this guy's saying. And I can't hear him in there like this. And so I said, excuse me, just a second, I got to hear this. And I walk back in there. JK was there that night. By the way, and I walk around the corner, and this guy's got a deck of cards up there, and he's doing card tricks from the podium. I went, what are you doing? Like this, and he stops like this, and he gets real red-faced, and I look at him and said, what are you doing? And he goes, "Well, I thought I would show some card tricks." I said, "Why?" And he said, "Well, because they, you know, they're in treatment and they need some relief. They need some entertainment." And I said, "Could you come with me and let me have the cards?" And I walked him outside, and this girl met us outside, the girl from the other side, from the women's side. She was out there when we walked out like this. And I said, "I'm done with this guy. If he comes back out here again, not only am I not going to let him talk, I'm going to bitch slap him. I don't want him here. And I gave him the cards and I said, "See you." And he left, and shortly thereafter she left. But the deal here is this, guys, is that not everybody has the same idea or the same intensity on what it is that we need to be doing. Underneath all of this is a deadly seriousness. We're talking life and death. And most of these guys are going to be sold a bill of goods that they can manage their life. You see, if they just go ahead. See, that same treatment place, by the way, 2 months later, decided to eliminate their treatment modality thing completely, and their new operating system, so to speak, that they set up out there is that there's no such thing as recovery. The only thing that they can do is lengthen the space between your two relapses. So the moment you relapse and sober up, you've begun the cycle of your next relapse, and our job in treatment is simply to lengthen that distance as far as we can. Now, this is what these guys are up against, and we're up there teaching them card tricks. No. This is the reason why we need to understand this at its simplest form. We need to understand exactly what it is that we're trying to teach these guys so that they can have their own unique and powerful experience so that they can walk free and clear from this deal. Because we know what recovery looks like. We live it every day. We know what it is. Turn back over to page 89. Practical experience shows that nothing will so much ensure immunity from drinking as intensive work with other alcoholics. Period. Exclamation point as far as I'm concerned. It works when other activities fail. This is our 12th suggestion. Carry this message to other alcoholics. You can help when no one else can. You can secure their confidence when others fail. Remember, they are very ill. Does this sound like it's written by a textbook guy? This sounds like it's written by a man that's in the trenches and knows exactly what he's talking about. Because he knows that he can tell these folks things that nobody else will be able to tell them. He can relate to them in a way that nobody else will be able to relate to them. And I'm telling you guys that every one of us, if there's a common thread that runs through every one of us, it's this feeling that perhaps we can't do it. That perhaps we're not smart enough, we're not quick enough, we're not bright enough, we're not whatever. You fill in the blank, it doesn't make any difference. But it's an amazing thing. For years and years and years and years, it's exactly what I thought. I can't do this. And I told Clifford point blank, I can't do this. Matter of fact, I told Gene Loughton right here in this room one night to kiss my butt that I wasn't ever going to talk at this group, ever. And you know what Gene Loughton did? Gene Loughton turned around and walked right up to Cliff and said, "Did you hear what he just said?" Clifford goes, "I caught the last of it." And that was it. And we had a little sit down. Next week, I'm standing up in front of the group talking. You see what I'm saying? But I bought into, because there's a fellowship that will sell me the idea that 12-step work is optional. It's something that's available. If you're good at it, do it. If you're drawn to it, if the Spirit moves you to do it, then you go do it. But if it doesn't, buddy, you need to steer clear. There's plenty of other men and women out there that could do this kind of stuff. That's the reason why we have the vast majority of people in AA today will never do any 12-step work. They're going to buy into the lame-o idea that just sitting in a meeting sharing is 12-step work. I don't buy it, guys. Send me all the emails you want. I welcome them. I don't buy it. I think it's a cop-out. The reason I say that, because right here in this text, it never said that. Right here in this text, it told you exactly what we're supposed to do and how to do it and when to do it. It told us the whole thing. And the idea that we could just sit in a meeting and share, I think if Bill Wilson had thought it was important, he would have said, okay, let's see, chapter 7. Let's start out this way. Step 12, share. It didn't. They didn't say that. I get real goofy around this, guys. You can tell it's a sore spot with me because for 7 long years, I sat in meetings with well-meaning people who love me to death and I love them, with those folks telling me, all you need to do is show up and you're a winner. All you need to do is be here and you're a winner. I didn't know the steps. I didn't know our work. I hadn't had a spiritual awakening. I didn't know anything about our program. I had nothing to offer except some pithy jokes and not even that sometimes. I mean, how many dick jokes can you tell in one meeting? I mean, it just, you know what I'm saying, guys? It's just kind of a lame kind of a deal. And that's the reason why when I walked over here, it was like, holy cow, who are you people? Really? This is all you do is just study? And I bet it would take me a while. It would take me 2 years here before Clifford would finally get a crawful of me and suggest I leave. And I'm so grateful I didn't. I just can't imagine what it would have been like if I'd left. I can't imagine how crazy my life would have been when I see all the stuff that happened as a result of just being here. Just just learning what I learned, and then making connecting up the realization that I needed to do something once I learned it. You see? Let me mention something real quick. Well, worldwide, what we have is we have a lot of guys, a lot of young guys especially, who are coming in and studying in literature-based meetings and learning lots and lots and lots about the Big Book. They're walking encyclopedias of the Big Book. The problem is that if we're not careful, depending on where they are, they'll stop right there. They're just walking encyclopedias of the Big Book. And I'm telling you right now, guys, between me and you, there's very little in this fellowship that's as unlovely as a Big Book guy that knows the Big Book but doesn't know how to use the Big Book. It's just flat-ass unlovely. Because what happens is it always comes out sideways. It always comes out, I'm going to quote a verse, or I'm going to quote a page number and this kind of stuff. And it's just like people are looking at you going like, so what? I mean, I remember sitting in a meeting one night with some brand new guys, and a guy recited chapter 5, How It Works. He recited the whole thing up to the steps, all that other kind of thing. The whole thing. And he thought he was just amazing. And I'm just kind of going like, what? Well, I could have read that. I mean, I don't understand why you thought... Why did you think it was so special to recite it? But it's like what we become. I mean, what we're trying to raise up here, guys. Remember, we're trying to raise up an army of people who know and love the Big Book and know and love the message that it carries, so we can go out, change, and affect lives. This is what we're trying to do. It has nothing to do with. We're not trying to raise up an army of zealots out there whacking people up the side of the head with a Big Book. It's obnoxious. It is. I mean, people say, I don't want to be a Big Book thumper. Ask yourself the question, why would they say that? They say it for a reason. They say it because it's obnoxious. We created that nightmare, and we can change it. That's the reason why we're going to be kinder and gentler. Doesn't mean we don't know the Big Book any less. We're still focused on what we're doing. We just don't have to have the attitude. We can just lose the self-righteous crap that we carry into this deal with it. I'm not saying you guys would, but I was horrible at it, guys. I'm telling you, man. It seems to me like after 2 years I played in this thing, then I got busy doing 12-step work, then I spent the next 2 years in a headlock. Clifford, my head's here, and Clifford's got me in a headlock like this, just squeezing me like this, making me see the things I needed to say. You know? You're arrogant. Quit. Bam. And then he'd set me down like this, you know? And I guarantee after a couple of years getting body slammed by Clifford, you just kind of go, okay, you're right, I'm wrong. And he was right. It was right. You can do this effectively with love, with humility, with a great deal of grace. It's an angel. That's the gayest ring I've ever heard.
I have another phone.
Okay. That's the only excuse that's going to work there. Oh, God. I love you. I love you. Okay. Let me tell you a quick story, okay? There was this guy named Terry that was a member here for a while, and some of you guys that have been around for a while have heard this story, but I always like to, when we're doing the steps on this stuff, when we're at step 12 stuff, I always like to tell this. A, it's a quick story, but B, nothing else I could tell you would draw us towards a more dramatic and graphic illustration of what 12-step work looks like. So here's the deal. I'm going to give you the sweet and down and dirty on it like this. Terry was the craziest looking kid I've ever seen in my whole life. Terry was a little street guy that lived up in the hood. He lived in Oak Cliff. Off of Jefferson, there's two buildings that are up here like this, and there was an old car that was parked right up in there, a pickup that was up on blocks between the two buildings. You couldn't even get in the car. And they just driven it up in there, pushed the windshield out, clawed out the front, and it had been sitting there forever. And Terry was living in that car and sleeping in the back end of the deal. It was in the middle of summer. The insects had eaten that boy alive. Well, a little roving street gang, of which Oak Cliff had at the time. I don't know if they still do like this, but these gangs were going up and down the street causing whatever havoc they wanted to do. And they saw him in there and grabbed him by the ankles and pulled him out of the back end of that pickup. He was laying on his stomach in the back of the pickup, and the very first thing that hit the ground was his face. And it busted everything. It just messed this boy up. And his nose was broken, his jaw was broken, his teeth were all busted out, and he was just amazing. he got cleaned up there at Homer Bound right around the corner. I mean, it's not 150 yards from Homer Bound's front door where this happened. And they took him over there. He got cleaned up, detoxed. And I met him the first night out of detox. And, buddy, let me tell you something. He's one of these kind of guys that you looked over there like this and you went, holy shit, like this. And I'm looking like this. I did the rest of the talk like this, looking over here like this, because he just looked horrible. And it was one of these kind of things. You go, sweet Jesus, if you'll keep this guy from not asking me to sponsor him, I'll go to China. I'll feed the pygmies. I'll do whatever we want to do. I just don't want to. And so after the talk like this, I go like this, and I look back, and he's standing right there, and I'm going, I just can't. I just turned around like this, and he starts going, I can't understand him. His friend's standing there, and I said, what did he say? And he says he wants you to sponsor him. And I said, of course he does. And we started our deal, and it was really painful because, I mean, he had bright red hair that just stuck straight up in the air, and just he's just a mess. This, oh, what a mess. Well, there's some step work involved in this thing. He embraced it real quick, and I fell in love with the guy. I mean, I'm telling you, he was just like he rides a bus 2.5 hours here from Oak Cliff, where it is. By the time he makes all of his connections, it takes him 2.5 hours to get here. Most nights when he's here, I made the deal, if he'll get here, I'll get him home. And so I'd take him home, and we'd talk on the way back like that. So one day he comes in, and he says, Myers, I want to borrow $5. I said, I don't have $5. And then I looked at him and I said, okay, I got $5, but you know I don't loan money. What do you want $5 for? And he said, I got some business stuff I got to tell. It's just $5. And so I gave him the $5, and then he pulls out a wad of money, and he probably had $20 in there already. And I'm feeling like I've been had. And I went, you already got some money. And he said, I know, I need all of it. And I said, okay. And he left. That's Tuesday night. Thursday night, he comes back in here. He's here when I get here to set up chairs. He's already in here setting chairs up. And I look over there, and there's a white bucket with a squeegee sticking out of the top of it sitting right there. And I went, Terry, what is this? And he said, oh, this is my new business. And he pulls out this business card, and he hands it to me, and it says TNS and something or another. There's two guys, another guy that he got out of Homer Bound. These two guys are living there. In those days, they kept them 90 days. They were there. And then after 90 days, they kept them another 30 or so days in what they call some kind of transitional living type thing. Later, the Blue House would spring out of the ashes of that deal, but that's how that all set up. But anyway, he was all excited about this thing. And what was happening was, in the morning, they'd take a bus and they'd come over here and they'd wash windows over here in Highland Village or Highland Park or whatever it is back over here. These fancy houses, they'd wash windows all day long, and then they'd come over here and just wait for the meeting to start, and it was the coolest. And they'd be talking big book, and he'd have a whole little, he always had a couple little guys around him, little busted up fried pies, and they'd be talking about all kinds of AA stuff. And it was just like, you just watching this guy work and going like, holy cow. Look, guys, come on. I sponsor men that live 150 yards down the road from here on Midway, and I can't get them to come to a meeting. And I got this guy that rides a bus every day that we have a meeting, he's here. And he did this for months. And it's just like, you know, I just love the guy. And so, anyway, one day he comes in and he says, hey, I finally got my old job back. And I said, what? That was a driving job, wasn't it? He said, yep, I'm going back on the road. I got my license back. And he shows it to me, and he says, so I'm leaving. And I'm just like, oh, man. Come on, you know, there's part of me that's excited that he's getting his job back, and there's another part of me that's just going. So he sold his company. He sold his company to another guy at Homer Bound, and he goes on the road. And I said, okay, now listen, here's how this rolls. You're going to call me every week, and we're going to talk, right? We're going to do some long distance stuff. He says, no problem. Well, like a month and a half goes by, and I don't hear from him at all. And I'm just thinking, oh, crap, I should have just said no. I should have just said don't do it. He goes, all right, I'll tell you what. One night on a Friday night about 10 o'clock at night, I get a call, and Londa says it's one of your guys, and I pick it up, and it's Terry. And I'm going, oh, no, Lord, please don't let. And I said, Terry, you okay? And he said, I'm okay. And I said, I got a problem, and I don't know how to handle it. I said, well, shoot. And he goes, all right, listen, here's the deal. I'm in Tennessee, and I drove into this place, and I'm supposed to drop a load off, but the people were already gone when I got there, so now I can't, I'm stuck here until Monday. And I said, and the problem is, and he said, they don't have any meetings here. There's no AA here. And I says, how do you know? And he said, I was in the cafe talking to a waitress, and she said that they used to have a long time ago, but they don't have any more. And she's an ex-drunk, and she they like to do a meeting and this kind of stuff, but that nobody started one. And I said, well, that's a problem. I said, you got a big book? And he says, well, sure, sure. I said, okay. And it's like dead silence. And he goes, hey, you don't reckon I could start this meeting, do you? I don't know why not, Terry. I mean, he said, okay, I'll call you back. And he hangs up. Well, later I would find out that through this girl, this girl in this cafe, she made some calls and got some other guys down out of the hills, and pretty soon they had this meeting, and they were meeting in the morning early at this cafe, and they started this meeting. Every morning they were having a meeting at the coffee shop before everybody else got let in, and Terry's just on cloud nine. So Terry leaves like this, and I don't hear from him for another 3 or 4 weeks like this. It's late at night again, I get another call from Terry. Terry, I said, Terry, where are you, buddy? You're supposed to call me more often. He said, I know, I'm just real busy. And I said, where are you? And he said, I'm in Maine. Maine, yeah, it's part of my deal. And he goes, you know, they don't have any meetings up here either. I go, well, Terry, I guess you're going to have to start one up there then, buddy. And he goes, yeah, that's kind of what I was thinking too. And he hangs up. I'm just going, no, don't hang up, I just, I wanted to talk to you. The deal here is, guys, that and he would just do this. What he was doing was he had a circular route. He would go up through the Appalachians, and then he'd go up to the Northeast, and then he'd circle back around and come back through Texas again, and then he just kept making these loops. And what he would do is every time he would come here, he'd collect money from all of his buddies here. We'd dump money into the deal. They'd buy big books. He'd buy chips. He'd buy crap that he needed like this, and he'd go back on the road and take them back up there, and he'd lay over in these places and go to these meetings and do these things. But now this guy's not 6 months sober. You understand what I'm saying? I mean, but he already grasped the idea that of why this stuff is so important. I mean, I'm 7 years to here and 2 years here. That's nine, isn't it? 9 years here, and I'm still holding 12-step work at a distance. And this guy at 6 months over gets it. On a gut level, he got exactly what it was he was supposed to be doing. Back to Fred's story, he knows exactly how to 12-step work. He knows exactly what to do on the rest of this stuff. And it took, I mean, it takes what it takes. It took Clifford in that back room looking at the ceiling going, I don't know what to do with you. I don't know. And making me go do 12-step work. And it was just like, I'll never forget after that conversation, I walked to this door where right back there and I remember walking out, and Dara stood up real straight, real fast. I think she was listening in the door. We've talked about it since then. She says she wasn't. She said she wasn't like this. But here's how the conversation went. I think you'll see why. You'll make the same conclusion that I did. I said, did you hear what that old fart told me? Just like that. And she said, I hope he told you to get off your dead ass. Just like that. And I went, where's the love? And I just kept walking. I hadn't fully decided whether I was going to stay or not. But here's the deal, though, is that these guys already understood that if we don't get involved and if we don't do what the book asks us to do, it wasn't couched as a suggestion. It wasn't couched as something that some people get to do and some people don't get to do. If you draw a sober breath, your responsibility is to 12-step. Your responsibility is to carry a message of recovery to somebody else. That's how that rolls. None of us gets clear. You fence sitters that aren't doing anything, stop it. Stop it. Somebody said one time in the nastiest email I think I've ever gotten, Myers, you think you're super AA guy because you do so much. And I jotted back in 15 seconds, I wrote back to him, if you get your dead ass in the trench, I wouldn't have to do so much. And I got to tell you guys, it feels that way sometimes. Sometimes when you look around at the men and women in this group who are doing lots and lots and lots, and people want to stand back and judge them and judge them some more. We ain't going there. I'm telling you right now, I can think of no group of people I'd rather be associated with than the men and women in this group who know and understand what it's like to get in a trench and actually fight a battle to try to save a life, and it's an uphill battle. Remember, guys, I'm not making this stuff up. For every one of us that's telling the truth about what this literature says, there's 10,000 people in middle-of-the-road AA out there telling them something different, telling them something completely different. Just get comfortable. Just stay and be friends with us a while. There's plenty of time to work those steps. Yeah, right. Yeah, right. This is the reason why it's so frustrating. We talked about it a little bit this morning. How many of you guys sponsor men and women who also go to other groups? There's a lot of us that do. And if you do, the first thing that you'll notice is how frustrating it is to have a guy or a girl leave here on Tuesday night elated by the idea of what they're getting ready to do. They're excited and just pumped to the max that they're getting ready to get out there and kick some AA butt and have a great time, that their lives are going to be changed forever as a result of doing it. And then by the time they work their way through any number of other meetings where people are not talking about it, or in fact, people are saying, hey, don't do what they do. You don't need to do that kind of stuff. Believe me, it's all you're going to do is ruin the opportunity. Just stay here. Wait till they come to us. There's a million things that people say out there. And then you watch them come back in on a Thursday night, and they're all deflated, and their shoulders are 2 inches lower than they were when they walked out of here on Tuesday night. And you have to ask the question. That's the reason why it's so frustrating sometimes when we're sponsoring people from other places. That's not every place. I'm not knocking other groups. I'm just saying, guys, if you've been around for any length of time, the conflict is there. The conflict sets itself up when we walk a path that's lined up in this book, and then we find guys and gals that don't do that. There's conflict because this book has sharp edges on it, and it says do this, don't do this, go here, go there. This is what you'll get. It lays it all out. These are the promises. This is what you'll get if you do this stuff. It's laid out perfect. And then we run right into the wall of people who want to look at it as some subjective piece of literature. The big book means what I think it means. That's all it is. Come on. There's lives at stake, and we need to be doing what we know saves lives. Will they get okay in another place? They might. People do. I'm not saying they don't. I'm just saying in my experience over the last 17 years that I've been a member of this group, I've seen thousands and thousands and thousands of people walk through that door and have a spiritual experience, an awakening so profound that it changed everything in their life. And it's okay. I just as soon stick around and keep doing that same deal, okay? Thanks, y'all. I enjoyed it.